Hi, hello again, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Speed Syndicate, this one, episode 76, titled Sweet Charlotte. I wonder why we titled it that. I'm Logan Anymores, or whatever's left of him, and it's great to be here with you this evening after a couple of weeks away. Let's bring in my co-host for the evening, the show creator, the syrup sipping John Mayer listening, Tyler Reddick watching, Adam Canadian Carbine. Come on in here.
Hello, Logan. Happy Monday to you, and happy return to the Speed Syndicate show. Yes. Here we've had a couple weeks off, getting caught up on some life stuff, all that excitement. But excited to be back here in the hot seat and ready to talk some racing.
Oh, we will absolutely do it. But first, how you been?
Yeah, things are good. You know, nothing too exciting. I watched the Coca-Cola 600 yesterday. I also watched the Indy 500 yesterday, and I also watched the Monaco Grand Prix yesterday. So I've actually got a leg up on Kyle Larson, because I did the triple, and he only attempted the double. It was a long day of just sitting and watching racing. But thankfully, not to spoil our weekend review, but thankfully the Cup race was the most exciting of the three. So it kept me going as the night wore on. But how about you? What's new with you?
Not a whole lot. I got sun poisoning a few weeks ago. That was fun.
Yes.
You got a picture of my forehead at the time, and it was
sure rusty. Did.
And so getting over sun poisoning, getting over bronchitis. So we're working on those things, and so we're hanging in there. So if you hear me do a couple of it's Just bear with me. Just bear with me. I'm well. I'm just, you know.
You're on the mend. The mend.
You know, lean and calm, sir. All right. So
that's right.
So you did the triple. I'll tell you what. The only time I do the triple is when I go to Wendy's. that's just my thing. I watched most of Indy, and I watched, of course, the Coca-Cola 600. What do you say we get into it?
Let's do it.
It's time for a little weekend review. Yes, time for a little weekend review. We're going to start it off with the most exciting race of the weekend. And, of course, I'm talking about the Coca-Cola 600. Ross Chastain spoiled a damn good day for Bill Byron. Bill won three of the four stages, technically. He finished P2, so don't be too brokenhearted for the fella. But his ass was mighty chapped on the post-race show, Prime. And can't hardly blame him. Ross Chastain pulls it off. Kind of an underdog story, let's be honest. Trackhouse has not been the same over the last season or two. They came out like gamebusters with the next-gen car, but have kind of cooled off a little bit considerably. Give me some overarching thoughts. Ross Chastain, your winner. Bill Byron, P2. A man that you're quite fond of, Chase Briscoe, P3. Talk to me.
Yeah, pretty wild race all around, really. Just lots going on. I love the long race. You know, I know it's I understand that we can't have every race be 600 miles, but I enjoy it. I thought it was great. Ross Chastain, you know, spills in practice and has to go to the backup car and all that. Starts P40. Literally last place, and somehow makes his way back up to the front and wins the race, passing Billiam. You got me saying Bill now. William Byron. It feels wrong to say that. William Byron, who was dominating all day, really, but it kind of also didn't feel like that. Like, if you look at the stats, you and I talk about the stats versus the eye test, like, clearly he led all those laps, and yeah, 283 laps he led. Like, that's more than anyone else, like, even came close. But it didn't feel like, while he was always in the mix, it didn't feel like it was a complete runaway a la Martin Truex Jr., you know, leading 398 laps, right? Like, there were some pushes from both Tyler Reddick, Denny Hamlin, and then eventually, obviously, Ross Chastain. Like, there was some trading back and forth of the lead, which I found was fun. I do wish that this car was a little easier to pass for the lead. but I'm being picky now because we just had a pretty great race with some legitimate like back and forth, but I don't know. Yeah. Not to get too far into that, but yeah, I don't know. William Byron scores 65 points on the day. So I'm sure he's not as upset now, but I can understand being upset after just that total kind of domination, or at least he just was the guy to beat. And then Ross Chastain scoops up in there and steals it away in the last five laps. I also want to just shout out Ross Chastain for that pass in that last five laps, because it was a hell of a pass, and it was clean, and it was, you know, not sort of the Ross Chastain we saw 2 or 3 years ago pre the Mr. H talking to, or the Mr. H public shaming display of 2022 or whatever that was.
In the old scarlet letter.
Yeah, no, it was a clean pass. Now, I actually read something today that Ross Chastain didn't realize that Denny was a lap down, and he thought Denny was coming to pass him for the lead as well. And so that's partially why he was as aggressive in that one moment. But yeah, good on him. Honestly, it's nice to see a clean finish, and it's nice to see someone like Ross Chastain, who maybe hasn't always had the best reputation for clean racing, get a victory and be rewarded for sort of clean racing. So I don't know. I've rambled on enough. What do you think?
No, we like your rambles. You don't ramble as often as I do. People want that. People have said, you know, that I talk a little too much sometimes. Isn't it?
I have heard that. Yes.
Some people say that about me, and let me tell you something. That's not true. I don't talk enough. Because think about all the gold that spews out. Think about
that. Yeah.
I mean, you get it more than anybody. Anywho, think about this. All right. It is pretty incredible he did not know. That is a spotter and crew chief failure. You are supposed to be aware of, hey, that's a lapper.
Well, sorry to interrupt. Apparently they told him, like, Denny's coming up with some fresh stuff, which they kind of meant like, oh, he had to pit again, so his stuff is fresh. Like, he's
that is some piss poor communication.
But that's bad, yeah.
Fresh enough. Yeah, I'd be nervous too. What the
What
the French, Tess? I just think that's ridiculous. No, William Byron gets 65 out of 70 points, and it's interesting you say eye test versus the numbers, because you're right. Eye test, I went, he doesn't look like he's dominating, because obviously I hearken back to that infamous Martin Truex Coke 600. What year was that? Give it to me. 2017, maybe?
2018, I think.
Something like that. Anyway, it was like your first race that you ever really dialed in for. And what a snoozer to welcome you in. But no, I texted our buddy Ryan, and I said, I know he's dominating this race, but he doesn't look like he's dominating this race.
Yeah, we've seen some races where Kyle Larson gets like 10, 15 seconds ahead of second place, right? And yes, he was often in the front, but he kind of always had a tail. Tyler Reddick kind of was pushing for it earlier on in the race. He fell back a little while. Denny Hamlin was pushing for a bit, and they were trading back and forth a little, but kind of the more consistent one was Byron in the front, but it was never a safe lead.
Yeah, I never felt like he was stinking up the show, as we say. Kyle Larson does that where he almost does his best King impression. It's just like, all right, let's see how far he can get ahead. I never felt that. It was interesting. You know, I'm not like a track house guy like a buddy Dan Foster, but it was nice to see Ross Chastain get up there and pass clean. However, I got to tell you, I think an underrated moment of the race is when after the pass, Byron started to overdrive it clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit the wall. And I'm not saying he would have came back and won. I don't have a clue, right? You know, there's a, you know, close on the counts and horseshoes and hand grenades. But I feel like he took any chance of mounting his own rally to Chastain's rally when he overdrove it. Like, you still got, you know, he still had, let's say, seven laps. I don't think, and I know this is easy for me to say sitting from the couch, but I felt like he picked a little too early to go all out if that makes sense. Like, I think he panicked when he got past. And I'm like, you took any shot you could, because let's be honest, you're Hendrick. You probably got the best equipment, number one. Number two, Chastain is known to be a little overly aggressive. If you kind of play Jaws a little bit, you know, it is conceivable, much more conceivable than Bill Byron doing it, that Chastain would overdrive it. I think I don't know if he comes back and win, but I think it becomes a much more interesting finish if he just kind of relaxes a little bit. You got a mile and a half each lap. You don't know what's going to happen. I do. I feel like in some regards, I don't want to say that Byron beat himself, but he eliminated himself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I also might think that Tyler Reddick might get an assist there, that near wipeout, which was a crazy save, really. But all just happened right in front of William Byron, kind of right before the pass. And so that slowed him up quite a bit. An amazing save, but you know, you're already a lap down at that point. Like, it's, yeah, you're not saving it to win the race. But yeah, I think, I don't know if it comes down to like that last pit stop too. Like, I think at that point of the race, Chastain had the faster car. And we saw that a few times where like the second place car seemed to be faster, but just you had trouble passing for the lead, right? Like, at times, Denny Hamlin seemed like he was faster, but just could not complete the pass, you know? And so there's something to be said about clean air, obviously. That's huge with this car. And so I do feel like maybe it was just that, you know, that kind of final money stop where maybe they finally found exactly what Ross Chastain needed, and he had the speed to beat William Byron. And it was a matter of just finding the right moment to do it. And I feel like Ross Chastain was patient with that. It was in the final five laps, because Ross Chastain only led five laps on the day. And so it was the final five laps. Those are the ones that count, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, if you're William Byron, and maybe throughout the rest of the day, you've seen people pass you, but then you can kind of come and get it back pretty easily. And maybe he just saw Chastain was gone, and it was suddenly like panic mode. Like, am I really going to let this slip away? And then overdrives it. And, you know, a little kiss of the wall here, a little like, you know, going too deep into the corner here and there. And suddenly it's completely out of reach. Right. So,
yeah, I just thought it was odd for a guy that is, you know, he's still a pretty young guy, but at this point he's becoming a veteran. That he kind of, I thought, hit the panic button a little bit. Oh my God, I got passed. I know we're late. I know it's only like 6-7 laps to go, but I just feel like don't start over driving till about 2 to go.
Yeah.
See what happens in those 5. And you might say, well, it's just 5 laps. We have seen a lot of craziness in 5 laps. You have no idea. Somebody could spin. Somebody could lose a tire. Ross overdrives it. Traffic gets in the way. So many different things, instances. I mean, frankly, we saw a microcosm of that in yesterday's race, right? I mean, we had tires flying off. We had random spins. We had all sorts of little incidents that you don't really think about as often. Of course, it more is likely when you are 600 laps instead of the usual 400, and then obviously Daytona is 500. One name I wanted to shout out before we kind of keep moving it along, Carson Hocevar looked like he could have won that race until his motor pulled a Blaney and said, I'll see you. What were your thoughts on his day?
He was a little colorful on the radio when that blew up there. I don't know if you heard that on the broadcast, but
I did.
Everyone did. I was disappointed just because I made that hot take prediction at the start of the year that he was going to win twice this year. So I was hoping this was the first one, but I don't know. He's been looking good lately, honestly. Like, that's for someone his age in that kind of level of equipment, like Spire is definitely getting better, but they're not top tier yet. To be in the conversation at that kind of point of the race near the end there, it's pretty remarkable for someone like him who, you know, I look back to, was it his last, maybe not his last, but like the Phoenix truck race where he, like, I can't even remember who it was he took out, and like, just, it was just this weird, like, he got really dunked on for being an immature driver and like going for retaliation and kind of ruined his own day and his own chance at the championship in the truck race. Does that ring a bell to you? I'm not remembering who it was he went after, but.
No, it does. Was that Ben Rhodes?
Might have been. It was, or was it the year that Ben Rhodes won? I don't know. I can't even remember it. Clearly not super memorable. No, but I just mean like that was.
I certainly recall that he had an incident and was getting absolutely ripped. Frankly, he had an incident earlier this year. Remember Chastain was talking to him out in the infield away, trying to be away from the microphones.
Yeah.
About, you know, hey, let's relax. And that is pot calling the kettle black. Yeah,
as a driver who, like, I remember the discussion at the time was this guy is young, he's talented, and he's like got some of that raw talent, but he needs to really rein it in and not be an idiot, basically, right? Like, and I feel like we've seen some of that progression this year, and to be basically on that front row, come into one of those last few restarts, only to have your car blow up. That's a disappointing end to the day, but it's not the last we'll see of Carson Hocevar, that's for sure.
No, I've been a believer in Carson Hocevar for quite some time. Remember, I kept a close eye on him for about that half a year in the 42 after Noah Gregson got the old heave-ho, as they call it in baseball terms. I think Carson Hocevar has got a ton of talent, but I think it's raw, and I think it's unpolished, and I think it needs nurtured. And I do think he's a little too aggressive at times. Now, I don't think you should do what Ross Chastain did and kind of go to the opposite end of the extreme, but there's got to be a happy medium. And I think Carson's future is bright. And if he stays at Spire, that means their future is bright too. Because yeah. I think he is a Cup Series winner. I don't know about this year. I actually am inclined to believe that he will win at some point this year. I think, honestly, as much as it sucks that the motor blew, you should be more confident in your hot take now. Because let's be honest, he's right in that conversation if the motor doesn't blow.
Yep.
So we got a lot of other mile and a half on the schedule. And
mile and a half that aren't that long either. Like if that's as long as your motor can last, then you should be fine for the rest of the year.
So. Yeah, you'll be fine for Nashville as we do 399 miles. That is the schedule distance. I know it's the Cracker Barrel 400. But if you look, folks, the distance is 399 miles.
399.9. It's very close.
Pardon me. Yeah. Well, very close. We need overtime to make them on. That's what we need. So I'll tell you what's not close. The Viva Mexico 250. It's like 241 miles.
Is it really? Oh, yeah. Well, maybe they're really expecting some overtime there.
Yeah. It's going to be the Viva Mexico 255. and so, you know, we'll see what happens, but I think Carson Hocevar really has a bright future. What else stuck out to you from the Cup Series race before we made it along?
It's got to be our first look at the Prime broadcast and just what an amazing job they did. I don't know if it's like partly just that we've been so mistreated as a fan base for so long, or if they were really good, or a mixture of both. You know, I think like suddenly, like if you look at some of the feedback online today, just about how that all went, everyone is like saying amazing job by everyone at Prime. So that does leave a little pressure, you know? So now next week they got to follow that up and do well. But the thing that just blew me away was the commercial-free end from lap 63 or so, all the way to the end. No commercials, no side-by-side commercials, no nothing. And I, you know, think back to Talladega with Fox going two separate commercial breaks within the final 15 laps and just how ridiculous that was and how upset I was at the time. It really added to the drama of the end of this race. Like you felt like you couldn't look away because everything was just happening in front of you, right? So props to them. I'm not sure how they figured that out or whether that's just because it's a paid service and they can afford to take less breaks or whether they front loaded some breaks or something. But honestly, like amazing job on that front. The commentary was great. It's always good to hear Dale Jr. in the booth. I'm a big fan of him. And I feel like him and Steve Letarte have great chemistry. Obviously they've worked together for a long time before they were broadcasting. So I don't know if I have any criticism, really. It was a great a great show.
I don't know that I have any criticism either. I really don't. I think I'm frozen. What am I doing here? Hey, how are you doing? That was odd. But no, I don't know that I have any criticism either of the broadcast. I thought it was great. The only thing I thought, I will always miss Mike Joy. As you know, I'm partial to him. That is just my opinion. My opinion is the only one that counts to me. So I miss Mike Joy, and I'm sorry. I still think he's better than Adam Alexander at 2025. I agree. Dale Jr.'s passion is palpable. It's contagious. He and Steve Letarte, not only do they have that relationship from their driving and crew chief days, but obviously they have a relationship from NBC. And so, yeah, the chemistry was well. And frankly, you could feel Jeff Gordon slide back into his time on TV when he was in the booth for a little bit. Because if you compare him to most other guests in the booth, he was really trying to add to, even though he was being a little homer to his guys. It was fun. Yeah. But I'm saying the way he spoke, his TV experience kicked in, and you could tell. No, I don't have any complaints at all. I do think people are a little unfair to Fox. Does Fox have a lot to improve upon? Absolutely. But I do think that people are unfair, and I think you're unfair. and I think it's a case because we are a spoiled era of, we don't, everything now is streaming. We don't do commercials. People DVR, and they just skip through the commercials. And so I think we're a little bit spoiled on that regard. Do I think they can be a little heavy with it? No doubt. I'm not saying that's not a realistic complaint. I just think the pitchforks that come out for Fox for their commercials, the old saying is you got to pay the bills. That's the way that goes. And Amazon Prime is a subscription service, as we know. And so that changes the game a little bit. Now, again, do I think it was much better than Fox? Absolutely. I did not enjoy the Mike Joy, Kevin Harvick, Clint Boyer combo this year. I just didn't think it clicked. I thought it was better. I thought it was better in some ways last season, if that's hard to believe. But I really did. I just thought Clint Boyer was, quite frankly, pretty unbearable for most of the time. And I know that he's a good dude, but I get the criticism of Fox, but the criticism is not about the commercials. The criticism is about the chemistry.
Right.
In my view, because
shout out to Carl Edwards too. Speaking of chemistry,
Carl in the house, Corey LaJoy, everyone's favorite NASCAR analyst. I love that we had a true pre and post show. I know you're such a Corey LaJoy guy.
I thought he was meh. That might be my one criticism. But
who would you replace him with? I mean,
Jamie McMurray.
Little Jamie baby, who sounded good on the CW broadcast. No, I knew that we were in for a great broadcast when they kicked off with the King. Nice little cold open there. I knew. I said we're gonna be great. As soon as we saw Long, Tall, and Handsome sit down there, I went, we are in good shape, boys. Mm-hmm. We are in good shape. No, I loved the broadcast overall. I can't think of a true criticism. I agree with you that Corey LaJoy might have been the weak spot, but even then I thought he was good.
I'm being harsh. I thought he was fine. It just
I loved a true pre and post show. Now, did you really need a post show after a 600-mile race? Pardon me. Probably not. But I loved having it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I missed most during the Fox portion of the contract. Is you get about 10 minutes after the race, and then they got to go. And I get it; you got a schedule to keep. But I just what I said in our article this week. Here's the difference. And I say this as one of the few that still understands or believes in Fox value. I shouldn't say understands. I could be wrong. I just still believe in it. Here's my biggest complaint is Amazon made NASCAR feel like a priority again. And that's what really stuck out to me. What's your take there?
Absolutely. Yeah. And as a Canadian fan too, I'll say this. I think, get it worse than you guys do down there. Oftentimes they're is a bit of a post-race show that you guys get and we don't. And so to get the full kind of post, I was like, what is all this? Like, we're talking to William Byron for like 4 or 5 minutes here. Like, this is amazing. Like, and I mean, poor guy, like, has to come in his fire suit and sit there and basically unpack how he failed on the day. Like, that's tough, but I was happy to see it, you know, like, great. Let's talk about all the stuff that we've all just seen. And there's always so much that goes on the track that doesn't always make it to broadcast. I thought they did a great job of kind of highlighting some of the more mid-pack battles that were going on when maybe the battle for the lead wasn't as exciting. There was lots to show, but I mean, after the race too, it's nice just to be like, hey, let's talk to our experts. Some of these people who have been here before and done it. What was that like? What did you think of this? It was nice to just hear that instead of, yeah, Fox, we don't really get that, right? And while you can have all the experts in the world calling it live, there's always something new happening kind of right after that. So there's not a whole lot of time to expand on it. So
yeah, there's no, I've had to resort to going to XM radio for any kind of a post race right. coverage during the Fox portion of the contract. And that, and I got to tell you, and I know you're newer, it didn't used to be that way. They used right. to do 2 hours of pre-coverage and an hour of post. I mean, it used mm-hmm. to be, they used to really break it down. So that's what I'm talking about, being a priority on the schedule for Prime. Obviously, I know they have more to work with. It's a subscription service, and you click on it at your own leisure. But even if it means moving more races to FS1 next year, give us some more content pre and post, just because we know this as kind of baby media members. If the media isn't hyping up the sport, who is?
Right.
That's what we're here for. And so Fox has got to find a way to improve upon that. I hope that both Fox, TNT, and NBC all take some notes on how that broadcast went, because I think everybody could stand to improve from what they've been doing. And so I'm really, really impressed, and it makes you a little extra excited for Nashville, knowing that you'll get a full breakdown of Charlotte, you'll get a full breakdown of Nashville, and then you'll get a look ahead at, I believe it's Michigan after Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really excited about that aspect. All right, we're going to keep moving along.
I did just want to say one thing, sorry.
Yep, go ahead,
for Canadian fans out there, I know they're advertising it as being on Prime, but Bell Media owns the rights for all the distribution in Canada. So I was watching the Prime broadcast, but it was still on our regular TSN channel that we watch it on every week. So it was just on a regular channel for us, and still got to see the Prime broadcast and the post-race show, which was lovely. So
I look forward to breaking it down over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm with a buddy of ours yet. You know, a buddy of ours keeps saying, give him the whole series. It's one race, bud.
Yeah.
Just call timeout on that.
Let's see how it goes. Yeah, but certainly a good start. Absolutely.
Well, we're off to an A+. William Byron, Big Bill, did get it done in the Xfinity race in the HendrickCars.com Chevrolet. Not much to say here. You know, good for him. Kind of expect it when he or Larson or occasionally Chase Elliott gets in that car. You expect him to win. But look, there's nothing. Winning's nice, period, the end, right?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts besides that?
I mean, sure, it's a nice consolation prize for him, especially after the way that the next day went for him. But I think he would give that win up for the Coke 600. You know, I think if he had his choice, sure, it's fun to go to victory lane, fun to all that. But yeah,
not quite the same luster in the Xfinity Series, especially when you're a Cup Series driver. Now if Matt DiBenedetto did it, he's partying because he's an extended driver. That's what he's got to shoot for.
Yep.
And so it's a little different. In trucks, it was Heim time once again. Kyle Busch didn't get it done. Of course, we always kind of become accustomed to Kyle Busch getting it done when he's in the truck. And
he threw a little shade.
He just doesn't have that raw KBM speed that he's used to. And I thought.
Woo-wee.
Because he's at last check, he's still a consultant for Spire Motorsports. That was part of the deal and so I'm like, oosh, that's gonna be a tough truck meeting whenever that takes place.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on those comments?
Well, I imagine there's quite a bit of carryover for staff as well, too. Like KBM basically became Spire, or I mean not became Spire, but like Spire moved in and kind of changed the sign on the door and then continued operations as they were going. So
sign on the door. I like
it. You know, I'm sure there's some new staff. I don't want to say it's completely the exact same, but yeah, I mean, what's different now, aside from the sign on the door? It seems like they've had quite an influx of money at Spire. So I don't know. Yeah, that is a little bit of interesting shade to kind of throw, especially after, you know, you might not be the owner anymore, but you're a valued partner in that they kind of turn to him as a truck regular in that kind of part-time car or truck. So,
and he's still a consultant in the organization.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, you know, classic KFB, I guess is all we can say, but yeah, that's, we're getting a little tense, boys, a little tense.
Well, I think he's probably just getting, he hasn't been in victory lane in a while, you know, in any series.
Yep.
And so, it's probably, he's not used to that, you know, it's like, that's foreign territory for him to like not continuously win all the time. And so sure, Cup Series is hard and he's in a new to him team ish, you know, and things aren't going as well and blah, blah, blah. Sure. Okay. You can excuse all that away, but in theory, or at least on paper, you should see Kyle Busch go down to the other series and dominate still. And when he's not doing that, it's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, it's got to be a bit of a bitter pill. Mm-hmm. We'll have more on Kyle Busch here in just a little bit. So stay tuned for that.
There you go. He did win Atlanta this year earlier on, but that was back in February. So it's been a while.
That's already been a long time going.
Yeah.
In IndyCar, Alex Palou got it done in the Indy 500. Obviously it's the creme de la creme of what they do. Kyle Larson attempted the double for the second consecutive year. He crashed out. You watched this race. I watched most of this race. What was your take?
I found it underwhelming. I don't know if it's just because I'm not a huge IndyCar guy. And I found just there was a lot of chaos at the beginning too. Like, Scott McLaughlin crashed out on the opening warm-up laps, which was like crazy. And these cars are clearly much more fragile than NASCAR, you know? So that's tough. You like, basically you bump the wall, you're kind of done for the day. Like that suspension just dies. And so, yeah, tough for him, but also like, what's going on? How are you screwing up in the formation lap here? Like, this is bad news. It was fine. Yeah. I don't know. There was a little bit of intrigue with Kyle Larson being in there, but then he kind of crashed out and it was like, really the only intrigue was like, is this race going to finish on time for Larson to make it to the Coke 600? And like, what does he do if that crunch time comes? Like last year it was like, oh, the Coca-Cola 600 is the priority. And then he just like never made it. And it seemed like it really wasn't the priority this year. There was kind of more talk about that, but do you think he would have, like, if he was still in the race, do you think he would have just gotten out at a certain point because it was too late and he had to leave? Like, I don't know.
He alluded to it in a post-race interview. What's up, Ryan? Good to see you. He alluded to it in a post-race interview that he thought had he not crashed, he was going to have to get out anyway.
I know, but is that easy to say after the fact? That's what I mean. Like,
after the heat he and Hendrick got last year, yeah, I think they were kind of proverbially over a barrel on that, and I think they were going to absolutely have to. They were going to have to get him to Charlotte because they took a lot of flack, as you know, in NASCAR circles for him.
Hypothetically speaking, what if he's leading the race? What if he's in the lead and it's like, dude, you got to come pit and get out of the car and go to Charlotte now? Like, do you give up what could be an Indy 500 win?
He would have to with the way it was set up this year.
I guess, man.
Your first priority should be the Coke 600.
I mean, I don't disagree, but that's a
pisser, yeah.
On paper, yeah, great. But put you in that moment. I mean, I guess he's lucky in some senses that it didn't work out that way for him because he didn't have to actually make that decision. It was made for him. So
he seemed pretty dejected afterwards. He seemed to, he didn't rule out the idea of doing the double again, but he was starting to really wonder if that juice was worth the squeeze. Do you think he'll do the double again? Was it just some dejection because he had an all around bummer of a day, as he called it? You know, emotions obviously are fresh, but when it passes and it kind of fades, you go, well, that wasn't, that wasn't any more of a successful double than last year. Frankly, it might have been worse. And so do you think he tries it again? Maybe not next year, but at some point down the line, say the next 5 years?
I think so. I think he will regroup and be okay with it and want to do it again. I think part of that dejection, I think, was because really the reason he was out of both races was kind of his own fault. IndyCar, I mean, yeah, it's not his familiar territory. So like there was talk on the broadcast that he downshifted kind of at the wrong time and that got him really loose. And then he backed it into the corner. So that was kind of his own fault. I know the actual incident that took him out of the Coca-Cola 600 was Daniel Suarez getting into him. But the other reason that he was that far back was because he spun out on his own again in the cup race. And so you can kind of point to it being human error on his part rather than like, oh, the situation was out of my control. You know, someone crashed right in front of me and I got screwed up because of it. And that's why it didn't work out. Like this was a level of dejection that was like, yeah, if I had not made these mistakes, I might've been able to complete both races, you know, and maybe not with the timing, but just, yeah, this was his own doing.
He seemed to wonder if it was worth it, you know, given the tight time and it, the time has gotten tighter as years go on. A lot of people forget back when Tony Stewart did it, the Indy 500 started at like 11 a.m. The pomp and circumstances just got to the point that quite frankly, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, you kind of drag ass for the race to start. And it's just not very courteous to anybody involved. I mean, it's just, I think it was close to 1 o'clock before that thing got, before they thought about getting started. Then there was a small delay due to light rain, light drizzle. And so then you're talking 1:30, 1:45. The Coke 600 goes green at, let's call it 6:30. That's not a ton of time. When you consider just, you know, say he runs the 200 laps and then gets on a plane, do you make it there in time or does Allgaier got to sub in again at least to start? And so, you know, I wish, you know, obviously IndyCar has to do what they do best for their sport. I get that.
Yep.
But I don't understand. I don't understand at all in all of motorsports why start times just keep getting later and later. I mean, I know you're a West Coaster, so it would hurt you more than it would hurt me. But it wasn't, you know, 20 years ago, races started about 12, 1 o'clock. Frank, you know, if you go back to the King's Day, the 4th of July Daytona race started at 11 a.m.
Right.
And so
well, but that's 8 a.m. my time, right?
So slowly, and now we are more and more, we are, you know, for instance, this weekend is a 7 p.m. start time in Nashville.
Yeah, that's
why.
Weird.
Why on a Sunday night?
But I know. You did. When I saw that, I was like, "Oh, is it a Saturday night race?" No, it's a Sunday night race. That's
like I know it's gonna be a short race ish, but still
shorter than
shorter than the Coke 600 at the very least.
That's for sure.
You know, I just we're getting later and later.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Somebody help me.
Ratings, I guess. I don't know.
Then explain to me why we're doing 7 on Sunday.
Yeah, that's weird.
I got to tell you, I don't like it. Yeah. I'd be fine if it was 7 on Saturday, but 7 on Sunday.
I mean, I'm okay with it because that's 4 o'clock my time. That's a nice, you know,
midday, nice
leisurely. I can dinner. Get something done in the morning and, yeah.
A little dinner and then, you know, you're going to have dinner during the race, bro.
Yeah.
That's all, I guess. All right. Sounds good. All right. We'll talk about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Lando Norris won in Monaco. Obviously, while Monaco doesn't have the luster it used to have, it's still very prestigious, but it's hard to pass. It's impossible to pass. Makes this cup car look great. I didn't get up for this because I got up for Monaco a few years ago, and I was bored to tears.
It was rough.
And so you tell me how this went because I said, I ain't doing that.
So part of the issue with Monaco is that the streets are so narrow, it's hard to pass anywhere. And these Formula One cars have gotten wider and bigger over the years. There is actually, you can check out on racingrefresh.com. our pal Ryan has broken down the race and talked a little bit more about that in depth, because I'm not quite an expert on it. But the thing is about Monaco, you can do that race in just one pit stop. And so really it was a game of follow the leader. Everyone pits, everyone gets back on, and we keep going, and that's that. So qualifying really was you were fighting for the race win, basically. This year they tried to switch it up, and they said, we're mandating that you have to do two stops. We don't care where, when, but you can't do just a single stop. And so that was interesting, at least. It kind of added some intrigue around like how different teams were going to do things. But in the end, the top four didn't change positions. So your top four in the race started the same position, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, finished 1, 2, 3, 4. So, I don't know. I was talking with Ryan about this. Like, what do you do with Monaco? Because it is this prestigious crown jewel of Formula One. And yet it's just the product itself is bad, you know? So what do you do with it? I don't know. Cover it with dirt. Make it a dirt race.
Buddy, our buddy Colin Best, remember last year, I believe he was saying, might be time to get rid of Monaco because there's just no...
I know.
And I disagree. And I'm not an F1 guy, but I do not think the answer is to ever get rid of something that is historic and prestigious. Something that is a part of the greatest day in motorsports, as we call it, the greatest day in racing.
Now, actually... To touch on that too, sorry. Next year, Monaco is not on the Memorial Day weekend. I know. I just learned this like yesterday. So
I just learned it now.
Yeah, I didn't know this. Next year, the greatest day in motorsports. I'm not sure what race is going to be lined up on that week, but they've moved Monaco into June. So
interesting.
Maybe I don't know.
Conflict of some sort.
Yeah.
Oh well. And anyways, more things change, more they stay the same.
I'm glad I got up for just so I can say I completed the triple. I did get a response from Parker Clearman on Twitter saying that he was also doing the triple. I was hashtag the triple. I was tweeting all day, but it was a nice sleep last night too.
Do you intend to do the triple, whatever race F1 does? Do you intend to do the triple again next year?
It depends what race it is.
All right.
I don't know. I've been trying to follow F1 a little bit this year. It's been better than years past, but it's still just, I don't know. The more I watch it, I'm like, man, I just miss NASCAR. NASCAR is way more fun.
Get you lonesome for it. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. With that, what do you say we do some Speedway Scoop?
Let's do it.
All right, buddy. There are a couple of stories to get to. Couple of contract extensions to talk about. William Byron, Bill Byron, young Willie B, signed a long-term extension with HMS through 2029. Not really surprising by any stretch, but what's your thoughts on this? Anything?
Yeah, I think it's well-deserved. But I also think he's going to need to get a championship within these next 4 years here. Like this, if there's no championship for Willie B, at the end of this contract, I'm not sure they renew, you know, even if he's got a lot of wins, I think you got to take that next step. He's still relatively young and he's a great talent. So I think, you know, I'm not sure who else you would put in that seat if not him. And I could see him retiring from the 24 at some point as well, you know, like just staying there this whole career. But I feel like, okay, we've invested in you. Now you need to invest back in us at HMS, and we need a championship from you. So I could see it happening, but I think that's going to be the next step.
Well, give me the hot take. Does he win a championship over the course of this contract?
I'm going to say no.
No.
I'm going to say no.
Hit that hot button.
All right.
I got to ask our buddies about that.
I see William Byron as almost too nice / too passive to have that kind of killer instinct. Oof. I don't know. Oof. I know. It feels harsh. I don't know if I mean that, but that's kind of where I'm at right now because you put me on the spot.
Harsh. I don't ever mean that. I like it. All right. No, I think it is. I think it's a good move for Hendrick. Good, who for him, William, of course, it gives stability to both sides, and stability is so hard to find in this sport. Only the big teams seem to pull it off, and even they occasionally have some trouble. So, no, I think it's a good move for both owner and driver. You know, yep. I just, like you, I'm inclined to believe he doesn't win.
Really?
I'm inclined. I think he comes close.
Yeah.
But there's something – he doesn't seem like
– Here we go.
He doesn't feel like a perennial winner yet.
I've got – I'm going to refine my hot take for you. William Byron is the next Denny Hamlin in that he wins a lot of regular season races or even playoff races, just wins a lot of races, but never captures that elusive title.
Hot, hot, hot. We got it, as the Polar Express says. That is hot. All right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Another extension to break down. KFB is staying at RCR for at least one more season. He signed a one-year extension to 2026. What are your thoughts on this? And is next year make or break for the Kyle Busch-Richard Childress Racing relationship?
I think so, yeah. I mean, depending on how the rest of this year goes, assuming he stays winless this year, I don't know. He's shown some signs of some good moments, you know? So, like, it's not like he's floundering in, like, you know, P25 every week. He's had some close calls, you know? He's had a couple races that have slipped away from him, whether by his fault or not, like, just the way circumstances have gone. So I think he can still be competitive, but I also feel like the longer that winless streak gets, the more it gets in his head and the more he starts to have that, you know, can I even do this, that sneaks in. He would never admit you that, like he would never admit to that, but I feel like we're getting close to that. And so if we make it to the end of this season, no win, and start a next one, like it's kind of a put up or shut up year for Kyle Busch, which is a weird thing to say, because I don't know if 3 years ago we would have ever thought Kyle Busch would get to that point in his career, but
certainly not this soon. Right. I mean, he's still just 40. And mm-hmm. while he's been at it a long, long time, plenty of drivers have had great success past 40. And all of a sudden it feels like his back is against the wall a little bit, for lack of a better term. So interesting.
And RCR is going to need to put some more, you know, there's times when he's doing fine, but his equipment is just not up to par, you know? And so he's probably outperforming his equipment on most weeks, which is a tough spot for him to be in at this stage of his career. So maybe he doesn't win the rest of this year or all of next year. And he says, I need to go to a contender to, like, you know, a legitimate team. And I don't say that with shade at RCR, but just they haven't been perennial winners for a while, you know?
So. No, it's a great conundrum, because keep in mind, you also have Austin Hill, who appears close to being cup ready. Jesse Love a little further away, but not that far.
No.
And so it is a conundrum. Obviously there's talks that Pop might buy a third charter. So maybe that helps some things. And obviously the charter agreement is a big conundrum in itself.
Yeah.
No, it's a very, very fluid situation. And so it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this year plays out, because we still got over half the campaign to go, but, it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this year plays out and how next year goes. Cause I think it's make or break next year for Kyle Busch and RCR.
Yeah.
And then finally, C. Bell has got a new spotter, which is kind of strange. Adam, break it down for us,
buddy. Yeah, I don't know. I know I just added this last minute here to our topics we wanted to talk about. This is a really weird story, and it's probably one of those weird NASCAR stories where, like, everyone's really good at being tight-lipped and we'll never actually know. But there's something weird going on with Christopher Bell and his longtime spotter, who just up and quit this past week. Not only just quit, like quit after winning the All-Star race. Like, so it's not like, oh, the team's going nowhere, I'm not happy with the direction. Like, literally I'm not sure what his cut was of that $1 million, but I'm sure it was something. But there was, they said something on the broadcast last night, I think, that after the race, the spotter wasn't even in victory lane with Christopher Bell to celebrate. And so I don't know what's going on there. The official story from Christopher Bell is that he quit, and Christopher Bell was somewhat surprised by it. They don't really have anyone in the wings ready to go. So they've got this mechanic who's like wanting to get into the spotting business. They're trying him out, see what happens. I don't know. Like, what a weird, like, yeah, I don't know if we'll ever find out, because NASCAR is very good at keeping these weird little stories hush hush. I don't know if there was a disagreement or this guy just decided I'm taking my cut of the $1 million and I'm riding off into the sunset, or I don't know. But, It happened.
He pulled a Michael Jackson and went, you know what? This is it. This is it. This is it. It's the last damn race I'm going to do. I'll see. Yeah. I don't know what would cause that, but,
like,
but
you guys good. Go have fun in victory lane. Celebrate. Yeah. I'm out of here. I'm done.
I'm catching my flight tomorrow, and you'll never see my ass again. I like.
So weird. So weird.
It is. It's very odd. Very peculiar. But yeah, strange. More to that story than meets the eye. You can bet on that.
Yeah.
You know, I know you're not a tinfoil hat guy, but there's something going on there that they're not going to tell you about.
Oh, for sure.
So, all right. With that, what do you say we do a little weekend preview? All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've moved past the greatest day in racing, the greatest day in motorsports, and now it's time to look ahead. All three series are in Music City, Music City, USA, Nashville, where country music reigns supreme. Of course, it used to. I don't know what the hell they're playing these days, but it's not country music. Sorry, I know, boomer moment. Anywho, all three series in Nashville. You got to think that Corey Heim is the favorite in the truck series yet again. Xfinity will be a little more wide open. I got to tell you, at this point, I'm rooting for Sheldon Creed. Just because, man, this guy's putting in the work and getting no luck out of it. In the Cup Series, Joey Logano is one here. Ross Chastain, of course, is one here. We're not making any official picks, but who do you got your eye on in the Cup Series?
Yeah, those are two names for sure. I know we talked about it in our article that came out today, the post-race inspection. Chastain's riding the momentum of just having, you know, this big win at the Coca-Cola 600. So that's good. And we know he can win there because he's done it before. Joey Logano won this race last year in Nashville. So certainly, you know, and he won three races ago now. So he may still have some of that forward momentum going his way.
Didn't feel like it in Charlotte.
No, it didn't. You know, interesting timing as well after firing some of the big wigs at Team Penske. Yeah. And suddenly they're not doing so well. Yeah, I don't know. Honestly,
Austin Cindric had a rough day, folks.
Yeah, he did. He did.
It wasn't. It was not great. IndyCar in Detroit. F1 is in Spain. The NHRA is in New Hampshire. Epping, of course, 1 year ago, this is where one John Force got what is currently his final Wally. We'll see if that stands to always be the case or not, but
was that only a year ago? That feels like 7 years ago. I don't know if I'm just getting old or what.
Time just moves, my boy. Time just moves, man. All right, so we got a full slate of motorsports all around this great country, this great land. Even our friends to the north, you got to come on down sometime, get to the track, or we got to come up to you, one of the two. So we'll see what happens there. I'm hoping that Montreal race happens for you. I really am.
That'd be great.
So with that,
I don't know if I would go, to be honest. It's pretty far away. It's like asking you to go to Sonoma, like, just cause it's in the States as well. I don't know. Yeah. I can drive there. It's like a 50-hour drive.
We'll talk about it. We'll see what happens. let's figure that out when it comes. You know what I'm saying? With that. What do you say you update us on some racing refresh picks?
So we missed picks last week because we were off. So I
start missing picks more often.
I know. Yeah. This worked out in your favor. Yeah. Basically what I did, I didn't want us to miss out on any picks. And, yeah. But also I didn't want to like pick for everyone, sure. some marquee names and have you like lose that week or something. You know, I didn't want you to lose out on your Kyle Larson or something. So I kind of went down to the bottom of the standings and without really paying attention to who was going to win, I just picked four names for each of us. And it turned out that you were the winner. I gave myself Cole Custer. You had Ty Dillon. We gave producer Peyton Cody Ware, and we gave ChatGPT Riley Herbst. And you ended up winning the week, which brings you back into a tie with Peyton for third. So the two of you are at 28 points each. I've got 30, and then ChatGPT is still smoking us, 44.
I still think I'm on the pass.
I think we all can. You know, I've got some hope here. So ChatGPT being the big loser of the week, I'm gonna ask here who they have for Nashville this week. I meant to ask this before we started the show, but we're just doing it live here.
That's all right, live.
ChatGPT is. Let's see. ChatGPT is going to pick, and it's really thinking. I've used ChatGPT quite a bit today, and so I wonder if that. I feel like I use the free version, so it's really thinking. While it's thinking here, why don't you tell us a story, Logan?
Well, way back in '68, I ain't got nothing to tell. And so, look, Nashville coming up, excited about it. Hopefully it's a great broadcast for Prime yet again. Hopefully it's a great race, 7 p.m., odd start time for us East Coasters. Frankly, it's odd for you on the West at like 4, 4:30.
No, that is weird.
So it's a weird start time for all of us. And, you know, hopefully it all goes well. Do we have a pick yet, for God's sake?
Here we go. Yes, we have Ty Gibbs.
All right.
They've picked Ty Gibbs. Next up is producer Peyton. We do not have her pick at the moment, but we will get it. Sure. I am going to go next here, and I'm going to go with AJ Allmendinger. He was pretty solid. We didn't talk about him, but he was pretty good at Charlotte, sure. You know. We are expected to see him do well at road courses, but I feel like he's riding some hot hand here. Expect him to do well at Nashville. And then last but not least, you're up, sir.
I'm going to go with a guy riding a bit of a hot hand, at least based on this one race. Let's go Chase Briscoe.
Okay. Yes. Your fave.
I know you're a big fan.
I wouldn't even call myself a fan. You seem to really think that he's a bust, and I don't know if I agree with that. That's all.
He's 1,000%.
No, he's not. He just came P3 at the Coca-Cola 600.
He's going to be a bust. He'll be the biggest bust since Daniel Suarez at Joe Gibbs Racing said that.
Well,
I hope I'm wrong for this one week. Come on, Chase Briscoe. Let's go.
I'm shooting the hot button there for you on that. And I don't know, buddy.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, every great episode of Speed Sinner, it must come to an end. But what we do, it's time for a little closing time. All right, Adam, give me some final words, young man.
Yeah, just excited for what we have in store this weekend. The Prime broadcast is definitely, they got some big shoes to fill after their first week there, but I think it'll be great. Looking forward to that. And we're ending May here. This race this weekend is on June 1st, which is absolutely crazy to me. But I feel like I say that every month that goes by. It's just like I can't believe time is ticking down. So
yep.
Time keeps on ticking into the future, I believe. Is that
hello, Steve Miller.
One of your faves?
Ticking.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Nothing. Nothing huge going on this week other than Nashville. So Looking forward to it. How about you? What you got?
I'm looking forward to Nashville as well. Looking forward to getting over this bronchitis this last little bit here. That'd be wonderful. And so hopefully one more week will do it. But if not, we'll keep battling in how it goes. You've been there. Mm-hmm. I've been there. We'll keep trucking along. starting to formulate ideas of my next article for the website. So I don't know if that's going to be this week or not, but within the next 2 weeks, cool. I'm starting to get some ideas of what to write about, what to give a Loganity take on. So look forward to that. I do want to send our condolences to our producer, Peggy, her grandmother, who has not been well for the last month or two, especially passed away today. So our best wishes, thoughts, and prayers to her and her family. I do believe she'll be back here next week. She was planning on being here tonight, but then that happened. She did get to see her one more time today and then got the call on the way home. So, you know, just awful on that front. But you get through it. You know, unfortunately, we're meant to kind of lose grandparents. And so just our best wishes to her. And hopefully she's back with us next week. And until then, I hope you enjoy Nashville, Music City, USA. And we'll see what it has in store for us. And until then, we will see you at the next track.